I'm Tamara Steele. In this week's show, a separation is coming at a St. Stephen church. A St. John athlete sets a new record. Timely advice to protect yourself from fraud and more cash from the federal government to battle COVID-19. A St. Stephen church is leaving its organization over its support of LGBTQ+ members. The Association of Vineyard Churches Canada asked its churches to leave the association if they performed same-sex marriages. Paul Sambi's Stephanie Sirois spoke to head pastor Peter Fitch about the change.
Okay, my name is Peter Fitch. I'm a professor of religious studies at St. Stephen's University, and my wife and I and some friends started the St. Croix Vineyard Church in 1992. It became part of the... Do you want me to go on this long?
Absolutely. This is really interesting information, so I would love for you to keep going.
Okay. So, we started this our church as a community church in 1992. We were asked to join the Association of Vineyard Churches in the United States in 1994. There wasn't a vineyard denomination in Canada at that time. But in 1995, one formed, and we were one of the founding members. And over the years, my wife and I have been on the national leaders team for the vineyard in Canada. We love this movement. And we were disappointed that the church came to a conclusion that it couldn't have affirming churches as part of its group.
And can you tell me basically a little bit about the decision to leave the denomination?
Yeah, well, we were asked to leave. And about 2013, I wrote a book about something that I'd come to believe quite passionately, which was that conservative Christians had made a terrible mistake in excluding LGBTQ+ people. And the book was called Learning to Interpret Toward Love, Actually Embracing People of Different Sexuality in the Kind of Churches Where They Haven't Been. And this became kind of a polarizing force in the denomination. People spoke about it a great deal. And it was soon after that we were approached for the first time and asked to do a same-sex marriage. And in 2014, a little bit after the book had come out, the denomination had sent a letter to all pastors saying, do not do same-sex marriages and don't ordain practicing homosexuals. So, but we felt that we just couldn't follow that decree because it went against our conscience. So we did the first marriage, and we've done a couple of others since when people have asked us to, and so we stayed within the denomination, hoping that we'd get a chance to change the views of some of the people there. We respect them very much, but we thought they were making a mistake.
Okay, and when you say you're leaving the denomination, what exactly does that mean?
Well, it's just, maybe I can explain it this way. Last summer, a leader in a vineyard church in Canada who identifies as queer wrote a letter to the current national team, and many people across the country signed it, saying, we don't think that your process is good enough at this point. We don't think you're hearing from enough marginalized voices. We don't think you're hearing from enough gay Christians, for instance. And the group, the national leaders team, took it extremely seriously, and they entered a six-month period of discernment to see whether or not they would change the 2014 requirement that they had sent to all the pastors. And they came to their final conclusion at the end of January, and they decided that they wouldn't change it. So they asked all churches that couldn't abide by that to leave and to stop using the name Vineyard. That's really what it means to us. We're just being asked to leave the association that we've been part of for the last 25 years, I guess.
Will the decision change anything about what works daily or weekly, or is there anything that's going to change beyond that?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. We've been pretty active in St. Stephen. When I first started writing about these things, I wrote another book over this on this topic too. When I first started talking about it a lot, maybe 10 years ago, we did lose some people from our congregation, and some wonderful people. But over time, our congregation filled up again and filled up with younger people, with people with different perspectives, sometimes different religious perspectives, with some atheists. And so our church has been pretty vibrant in this community. We've got a huge community garden, and we, We've done some work with refugees. We do a lot of different kinds of music events, and so we're just trying to do good work in the community, and we'll just keep doing that.
And all the members are on board for moving forward from here?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it seems like. I mean, we don't insist that everybody think the same way. But it seems to me that everybody thinks that this is a justice issue, and that people from the LGBTQ community have not been well treated, and in traditional religious groups, although they mean extremely well, they're actually treating people as second-class citizens. So we just didn't think that was right or fair.
I'm just wondering, has there been a new name chosen yet, or are there any ideas or anything like that?
There are some ideas, but we haven't chosen a name yet. But we've chosen March the 15th as the day to sort of officially step away, and we're going to do it in the style of a kind of a jazzy funeral. So we're going to start with some lament, an interspersed story and song from people that have been involved for a long time. And so we've got a lot of musicians here, so people will be doing different kinds of music, and then we're going to move it from kind of sadness towards celebration, and at that time we'll announce our new name. The reason we got some media attention is because when we were asked to leave, we thought, well, we don't want to leave angrily because church history is littered with all kinds of bad separations. On the other hand, we do really believe in what we're saying, so we thought maybe the opposite of war isn't peace, it's creation. That's from a line in a Broadway show, and earlier it's from a Greek philosopher. But we thought the opposite of, you know, we don't want to fight our friends. We just want to find a creative way forward. So what we did was we created a website called altvineyard.ca, and we invited people around the world, whether they had ever been in the vineyard or whether they were Christians, just to join us as honorary members on the day that we leave. And so that grew pretty quickly, and that's how come people have been asking us to share our story.
Absolutely. And was there anything else you wanted to add to this at all, or?
No, I think that's it. We respect the people that have asked us to leave, and we're sorry that it didn't work. We weren't trying to get everyone to change to think as we do. We were trying to get them to open the door a little bit so that there could be diversity, a wider table is what we call it. So there could be room for people like us that thought differently.
I'm Stephanie Sirwa.
Victoria LeBlanc finished her last Atlantic University Sport Track and Field Championship in the record books. LeBlanc won the women's triple jump on February 21st and set a new AUS record of 12.01 meters. But the Kwispamsis native, who plays for the University of New Brunswick, said the record almost didn't happen. Pulse MB's Brad Perry spoke with LeBlanc about her record-setting victory.
That was my goal this weekend, was to break the record and win triple jump. And leading up to it, I didn't have the jumps that I wanted, and I didn't actually get the record until my last jump. So I was kind of freaking out inside because it was my last AUS ever, and I really wanted the record. And then my last jump, I got it, so I was super pumped.
I was going to say, there must have been a lot of anticipation going on in your head, realizing that, you know, you had basically one jump left in your AUS career, and you had to make it worth it.
Yeah, exactly. And also the announcer, every time I would jump, would like come over and be like, oh, is she going to get it on this jump? And like that put on a little more pressure for me. And then it was awesome just to have all of my teammates there cheering me on. So that definitely helped.
That was a good point. I was going to ask that too. You know, how did, you know, the fact that you were doing this here at your, I guess, your home turf now here at the Irving Oil Fieldhouse, that must have played a big role in helping you out.
Yes, it was very special to compete at the Irving Oil Fieldhouse for my last AUS. I had many friends that were able to come and watch because usually it's in Moncton. So they weren't able to come and watch. So having it here was just awesome, and my family was able to come and watch too, so it was really special.
Now, of course, this was the first AUS championship here in the city, I think, in almost 4 decades now that we have the new Irving Oil Fieldhouse. So what was it like competing at this venue? Obviously, I know you guys had some time to kind of train in there, and there were a couple of smaller competitions that were held there before. What was it like to kind of be able to play out of there?
It was awesome, because usually we, in the past 5 years that I've been here, and previous years before I was in university, AUS was always in Moncton, and the track in Moncton is not a regulated track. It's 166 meters, so you have to run like weird distances, and the track at the Irving Old Fieldhouse is 200. So it was just awesome, and it's so big, and the energy in there from all teams was just amazing, and lots of records were broken from all different schools, so it was awesome.
And lastly, you know, what do you think having a state-of-the-art facility like this right here in St. John is going to mean for the sport of track and field in the region?
I think it's awesome because we're able to host big championships. We hosted AUS, obviously, and we're hosting the eSports National Track and Field Championship, which is going to bring a bunch of people to St. John. It should also help with recruiting for UMB, hopefully, just having this state-of-the-art facility. And hopefully we can get more members out to St. John Track and Field Club as well.
I'm Brad Perry.
The Financial and Consumer Services Commission says recognizing the red flags of fraud is the best defense. The provincial organization will be promoting awareness throughout March, which is Fraud Prevention Month. Pulse NB's Brad Perry spoke with Senior Education Officer Aaron King.
Well, it's over $3.5 million that New Brunswickers have reported losing to fraud and scams over the past 3 years. We've been looking at the numbers that have been provided to us by the Canadian Anti-Fraud Centre. But again, the Canadian Anti-Fraud Centre believes that only 5% of people actually report losing money to frauds and scams. So the real number is probably a lot higher than $3.5 million.
What do you think it is that a lot of people don't necessarily report fraud when they become a victim?
I think it has a lot to do with being embarrassed or ashamed that they've been tricked out of their money, and they don't want to admit that they were scammed.
Now, I know, of course, the best defense for, you know, trying to avoid becoming a victim of fraud is recognizing the red flags that that are there. What are some of the things that people should be looking out for to try to determine whether or not they could be looking at a fraud?
Well, we have many different red flags of fraud. Of course, the one that you hear about all the time is if it sounds too good to be true. And we used to say it probably is, and we just say it is. So if an offer sounds too good to be true, that's a red flag. If they threaten you if you get a phone call and it's someone purporting to be from the Canadian Revenue Agency or Immigration Canada or any government agency, and they threaten you to act immediately or you'll be arrested or prosecuted, that's a big red flag. If they have a request for you to confirm personal or financial information when they've contacted you, so they're asking for your driver's license, your passport number, that kind of information, you shouldn't give that out readily over the phone, and that's a red flag. And anytime anybody asks you to make a payment in gift cards or cryptocurrencies or other alternative payment methods, another big red flag.
And if I understand, New Brunswick is seeing an increase in extortion scams. That's becoming more prevalent in the province. Is that right?
Well, the numbers, again, these are reported, so we don't know. This is the reported cases. Again, only 5% of people actually report frauds and scams, but it definitely was the number one in the number of reported cases. So we had 192 reported cases last year in New Brunswick, and there were about 31 victims that we know of who lost a total of over $151,000. So extortion is also the number one fraud and scam reported in Canada last year, too. They had out for 10,000 reports. And it can be done either through the email, internet, or the phone, and it can target both businesses and individuals. And it has many different faces, different ways that it comes about. So everything from denial of service, so a business might get someone pretending to be or threaten to take down their company's website, and unless they make a payment. It can be someone pretending to be from a local hydro company calling you up on the phone and saying that your company didn't pay their hydro bill for the last couple of months, and if you don't make a payment now, they're going to cut the hydro off. And in some cases, that can be really detrimental to a business to lose their hydro. So it can be an immigration scam or extortion scam, or even you can see it with the Canada Revenue scam. So if you fail to register some documents or fail to pay your taxes, the scammers will pretend that they're from those agencies, and they become threatening and say, if you don't make a payment now, we're going to come and arrest you. So it can look have many different faces, the extortion, and as well as ransomware, which we hear about targeting businesses. Again, they'll unleash a malware on a business and lock up their information unless the company pays a fee.
I guess, you know, those types of scams really come down to, you know, scammers trying to play with people's fear and, you know, kind of making them panic so they're not quite thinking straight. Is that right?
That's right. Well, we know that scammers play on our emotions, and so they try to get us to act quickly. They try to make it scare us, or they even with investment frauds, they'll make us try to make us feel like we don't have enough money saved for our retirement or for our child's education. And so they'll tap into those emotions that we have, and they're really good at it. So that's why we always have to be on the alert for these types of things.
And I understand the Financial and Consumer Services Commission is doing a few events and different things as part of Fraud Prevention Month as well?
Right. Well, we'll be sharing a lot of tips and some of the red flags of fraud on our social media sites. And also, we're going to be attending the home show, the Greater Moncton Home Show in Moncton from March 20th to 22nd. We'll also have a fraud-themed contest on our Fortune, which is our online trivia game, running throughout the month. And so we're going to be out trying to get out the awareness out in the community of what the red flags of fraud are. I just think that we always need to question and think seriously before making any financial or purchasing decisions, and that's the best way to protect yourself from being victimized by a con artist. So always question, always slow down your decision-making when it comes to making financial decisions or to handing over money to anybody who's calling you on the phone. If you suspect that the person who's calling you is a fraud or scam artist, hang up and report it to the police or to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center. And if it's in the areas that we regulate, then you can contact us. We have lots of information on frauds and scams and the different frauds and scams and how they look and how they can approach you on our website. So please go visit fcmb.ca.
I'm Brad Perry.
The federal government has announced another $20 million to fund COVID-19 research. That's on top of the $7 million the government had originally planned to spend. Health Minister Patty Hajdu says it's important for Canada to make this investment.
Canada has a wide body of fantastic researchers who actually have expertise in the area of virology, in the area of vaccine development, in the area of treatment of viruses, and also all of the social issues that go along with an outbreak like this.
Innovation Minister Navdeep Bains outlined some of the details of how the money might be spent on Friday.
The announcement today is for $27 million. That's specifically targeted towards the mitigating measures, the diagnostics, combating misinformation, looking at vaccines and the prospects of developing that in a more timely manner. We have significant resources, federal labs, federal researchers at our disposal. We have got world-class researchers behind us. We're working around the clock, and we made it very clear that we're willing to deploy the resources required.
There's more than 50 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Canada, but no deaths have been reported. That's it for this week's show. I'm Tamara Steele.